everybody has a Jacinta somewhere in their country. They just need to find them and then elect them. We see Jacinta on the TV every day at 1 o'clock, and she does a stellar job of informing us, so we don't really need much more information than that, really. The whole way that it was formulated and rolled out was actually really incredible when you think back, because you know Kiwis, Ollie, gosh, I mean, we're just so laid back. You're not going to get us to do anything. We've got to buy into it, you know. And so they must have done a lot of work, because when they did roll it out, they had everything in line, you know. They had invented this alert system. They had made sure that they had wage subsidy in place and the small business subsidies. And so that $10.7 billion has been spent on wage subsidy, which is a big deal when you've got no income coming in.
Welcome to another episode of Gone Workabout. And today I am here with my cousin and great guest, Susan Kingy from New Zealand. Kia ora.
Kia ora, kia ora, kia ora. And it's so nice to hear Ollie again, as I said before. Yeah, really is.
We saw each other in Wellington just a few months ago, but So much has changed in that time, right? So, let's start with you, and just a little bit about where you grew up, and then no doubt we'll delve a little bit into Māoridom, because other people don't understand it, and I think it would be nice for them too. And then talk about how you made your way down to Wellington, and then we'll go into a bit of COVID. Take it away.
Pretty uninteresting, Ollie. Okay, so I grew up in Auckland. Ollie and my grandparents are actually the same two people, so we're first cousins. I grew up in Auckland. My mother was part Māori, and my father, of course, was born in the UK and had a fairly suburban life, and got married, moved down to Wellington, and I live in Wellington. It's not, you know, that's about it, really. Got three kids who are in their 30s. And two grandchildren. What else can I say?
So what is Wellington to people versus Auckland? Explain to people what the difference is and why one would end up in Wellington.
Wellington really is, for a start, it's the capital, but it's where government is. So, you know, we have the ministries of everything down here, and Auckland is more like the business place in New Zealand. So Auckland has the biggest population. It also has the biggest Polynesian population in the world too, actually, because there's lots of people who come in and immigrate from the Pacific Islands. And, of course, Māori are Polynesian as well, and we are the indigenous people of New Zealand. So huge Māori population up there, less down here. Most jobs in Wellington would be connected somehow to the government, definitely, whereas Auckland really is just business. That's the difference.
And that's what makes talking to you about this so interesting, is because I feel like when we were in Wellington over Christmas, it was immediately apparent that government is here, and that we are all thinking about it, and we're all involved in it in some way, right? So I feel like you get a really good, clean message of what's going on. So talk a bit about what it's been like since I saw you at Christmas, when we could hear about this thing happening in Wuhan, through to something happened in Italy, through to the lockdown, and then yesterday's announcement.
Well, you know, we could all see what's happening overseas. Being this far out around the world too, we are very lucky, because we got to see what happened in other countries before it arrived. And we're very, very lucky. We're an island nation, and we've got a population of 5 million. So that in itself gave us the heads up, really. So the government, before they announced on the 27th of April, that we were going into lockdown, and gave us 2 days to prepare for it. And they brought in this level system, which was level 1 to 4. And we started out at level 3, which is restrictive. That you still had to stay home. But they gave us basically 2 days to get prepared. And once we went to level four, then it was really just essential people who were allowed to come out of home.
Which is very similar to the UK, yeah, except that you had the concept of the bubble, and I also, and I'd love you to go into that, and then you also had the concept of abiding by it, because what I noticed in the UK is people were not abiding by it.
I think that comes right back to how much groundwork and how much effort went into communication in terms of the government to ordinary Kiwis. Like I said, we could see it coming, and nobody thought, oh, you know, we're not going to do anything. At the time, people were thinking, oh, for goodness sake, close the borders, because we could see the problems happening. The government did such a good idea of, first of all, inventing the four levels, and then inventing a very simplistic idea of having a bubble. And everyone had to make a bubble. Your bubble had to be yourself and whoever was living at your house. And you were to keep that bubble, and that's level four. Unless you were an essential worker, you were not allowed out of the bubble. So even to your neighbours, you weren't allowed to come in contact with them. But you could go for a walk as long as you didn't drive to that walk. So you could walk any time of the day, unlike some other places around the world. So you could get exercise. The concept of the bubble was very good because it was just so simple, you know. She had to sell it and sell it in a way that really everybody understood. And it's such a simple concept, you know.
Yeah. And you would hear people saying, I can't let them into my bubble, don't get into somebody else's bubble, etc.
That's right. And so everybody knows what a bubble is, you know, and your bubble could actually include someone if they were looking after your kids and they, you know, and you were an essential worker. But so at the same time, so she gave us 2 days to organise stuff. So, oh, you should have seen Wellington City. There were people rolling out chairs and screens and stuff because everyone had to work from home. You couldn't go into anywhere. You had to stay in your bubble. So in your bubble, you could work from home, but a lot of people weren't really set up to work from home. So we had about 48 hours to sort all that out. And once that was sorted, then pretty much if you drove down the road, you saw no one. And I mean no one, because...
I experienced that in the first week or two in the UK. It was bizarre, wasn't it?
No one, yeah. And even here, when you went to the supermarket, only one person was allowed to the supermarket. You weren't allowed in couples. You weren't allowed to take your bubble to the supermarket. You had to leave your bubble at home. So it was very, very, for us, it was really strict. And, you know, we're a group of people who really don't like being told what to do. But because it was put in a way, it is so true. And, you know, they knew that, and they knew they had to come up with something that was simple, that everybody could get their head around, and also backed up with the facts. And every day at 1 o'clock, we would get the facts. And they weren't, you know, sugar-coated. They were just the facts. And that's what people actually want. They want to know. They want to know how many cases are in the country. They want to know where they are. They want to know locally where they are, you know. I can tell
so,
you.
So let me test you. So where are we at with New Zealand today?
Today, what are we up to today? We've had no new cases. We've had no one die. We've got two people in hospital. 93% of the people who were infected have recovered. And I think we've got 1,497 cases in total. So
it's amazing that you know that level of detail, because of all the countries and people I've spoken to, nobody has had that level of detail.
Well, that's because from day one, they have been on at 1 o'clock every day, and that's what they lead with. They lead with that. How many people in the hospital? You know, I can even tell you how many people in my district, in my little area. So I am in Wellington, but I actually live in right next to it, like a suburb or city called the Hutt Valley. And in the Hutt Valley, we have had 36 days of nothing at all. You know,
wow.
Whereas Wellington has had 21 days of nothing, I mean, so you can go, I can tell you that there's 16 clusters in the whole country.
What's a cluster?
A cluster. And again, this is all these sorts of things that they've sort of not made up, not invented, but everybody knows what they are now. A cluster is a group of people that have been infected by the same person, really. So we had a big cluster at a wedding down in Invercargill.
Which is the south of the South Island. Yep.
Another big cluster at a rest home in Rosewood. In fact, that Rosewood cluster has got half of the people who've died. So 21 or 22 people have died in total in New Zealand. 11 of them were from that cluster.
See, that's really interesting because the previous episode I was talking to a good friend in the UK, and one of the points that he made was where countries got it wrong is that people didn't anticipate the effect that this would have on care homes. And they didn't anticipate that, of course, the elderly who are being cared for have to have contact with people every day, and they're also at the highest risk, you know? And so I feel like people missed a trick there in many countries.
They also missed a trick in that they didn't provide the care workers, who are often not the registered, nurses that you get in your ordinary, public hospital, private hospital. They're the caregivers, and for some reason they don't think they are worth proper PPE. Only the ones working in ED, but the fact is they have got COVID within their residential areas. They need it. And they seem to be the last people thought about. So this particular cluster, though, the government came in and they removed people from the rest home and and looked after them because they could. Yeah, because we have such a whole low number that you can treat quite easily, get treated quite easily.
And it's fair to say also, I think you're right in saying that distance was a real savior here, wasn't
Oh,
it?
what?
Because it gave pre-warning compared to, say, the UK, where I don't know what percentage of the world's flights go through London, but quite a high percentage.
Well, yeah, I mean, we do have a lot of visitors to New Zealand. I mean, one of the first things the government did was cut flights to China. But actually, the people who brought it in were the returning Kiwis, and they brought in more because they were, because they're residents. But Jacinda the other day actually said that they were considering, when they were formulating this whole thing, to actually not even let residents in. And then they thought, oh, that's a bit mean. So they did. But go hard and fast. And because we have gone hard and fast, we opened up to level two today.
What does that mean?
It means that you can, because we've got so low numbers, like I said, we haven't had a case where I am for 39 days. So shops, malls, cafes, playgrounds, hairdressers, cinemas open, schools go back, bars will open about another week after that. And
Wow, that just seems unbelievable to me. Wow.
social gatherings are limited to 10 people. So tangihanga and funerals are still 10 people. Which has been quite awful for those people.
Do you want to explain what each, what tangis are?
Tangi is the way that the Māori here have funerals. So a normal tangi would be someone passes away, the family go to the marae, which is, what's marae is,
I just call it the meeting place, just to make it
yeah,
easy for people.
it's a meeting area which consists usually of a big meeting house and a couple of other side buildings, but it's a place that people have together and meet at. So when someone dies, you take your deceased person to the meeting house. They lay in state there, and then anyone who wants to pay respects will come onto the marae, and usually still in groups, and pay their respects. And that takes place over 3 days. At the end of 3 days, then we take that person, bury them, and then everybody comes back and has, I guess, the same thing a wake would be, which is you have share a meal, and so I
And
guess.
that's, I just to touch on that for a moment, I think that's really interesting because part of the challenge with COVID for me has been the fear of death. And it seems to me that as I look across the different cultures that I've come into contact with, the better that a group of people are at accepting the passing into the next world, however they may term it, and the more at peace they are with that, the better it seems to be in terms of suffering for those that are left behind. And that process of the person being laying there in state for 3 days is very different to the Pākehā or the white people way, right? And do you want to just explain how that goes and why they are there for 3 days and people visiting?
Yeah, I mean, it's not that they're just there for 3 days. You can stay, and a meeting house is a place where you have beds. This is going to sound a bit odd, but look it up on the internet, so you can have an idea visually of what it looks like. But it's like a big room which has got carvings usually all around it, and which is the history of whatever that tribe is. So it has can have photos and carvings or other things, but it is the body of sort of almost like a body of a person, and you go into the house, and it which looks a little bit like a big hall. It's got, and there are beds, and you can stay there. And you will stay if you're family, or even if you're not family but you're close, you can stay there for 3 days, and grieve with the family and with other people, and listen, and go back over all the stories of that person through their lifetime, what they've done, and what that person means to you, and also how you're connected to them in terms of bloodlines, and and really celebrate that person's life. And we do something called Porepore Ake, which is the night before they're buried, where people stay up late, and they basically tell stories of that person, and other stories too, usually quite hard case. And this whole process does help grieving because it really makes it real. This person has passed. You've had 3 days of grieving, and I can tell you from experience, it's you cry and you let it out and you laugh, and you've got people around you. And by the time you get to the end of 3 days, yes, it's time to bury that person, but you really do know they have gone, and you have given them a good send off, and that's how we grieve. That's a tangi. So it is, can my uncle had a massive tangi, which literally had thousands of people through, down to my nephew who had a tangi a couple of years ago, and there were probably only about 60 people. But most tangis will have people coming in and out and paying their respects, at least probably a couple of hundred, over the
Which
3 days.
is quite interesting because compare that to a European funeral, often on a day that's only a couple of days after the death, often difficult for people to get to, and therefore often a very small number of people. And I think that's a real shame because I think that it seems to take longer that way, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it is about grieving. It really is about grieving. The most important thing is people. And actually, getting back to even what Jacinta came up with, it's a Māori proverb, when she first addressed the nation and said, we're going to do this. I mean, she said, which is a famous one here, is what is the most important thing? He tangata, he tangata, he tangata. And that means it is the people, it is the people, it is the people. And that is true. And I think, when it comes right down to it, this government has actually shown that. You will get the odd person who doesn't agree with it, but honestly, I haven't spoken to anyone who has disagreed with the way that the government has done this. And that's actually quite shocking in itself.
That is quite unique.
Yeah.
It really is. Okay, so what comes next for New Zealand for you? You talked about level two. What comes beyond that?
Well, in terms of me, because I own my own business and that, and we all get back to business on Friday, Thursday this week. And
Wow.
because we did go so hard and so fast, and basically on a medical level, we have eliminated it. I mean, it's still there, and of course, it can still come in. But we all know that, you're looking at minimum 14 days before you see any numbers, and that's what we'll be watching. And because we are only 5 million people, and we have very good testing and follow up of that. If you're being told now, if you have the slightest snuffle or sniff, just go and get tested. But for me,
Wow. See, that is amazing because in the UK and in a lot of nations, testing has been very expensive and not widely available. And in fact, when I looked at the 32,000 that had died in the UK as of yesterday, it was quite clear, even in the government stats, that a lot of that these numbers are not accurate because not everybody gets tested,
I mean,
which is a shame.
and also, how many people have died, and you don't know that. It's a lot easier here, a lot easier, I've got to say. And of course, everybody bought into it so well that, they had all sorts of things throughout. I mean, even to the point that you could ring up a telephone number, and the government encouraged it to dob in people. Dob, tell people, dob in if people put their prices up because of COVID, So
Yeah,
the.
that's really good. That's really good. I heard about a chap, and I think it was in Texas, who had driven across a couple of states for a couple of days and had collected like $1 million US worth of hand sanitizer, and was selling it at extortionate prices, and was forced to donate it to charity.
Yeah, well, one of the good things that the government did before we went into level four was they captured all of the medical people, companies who supplied, and basically they had to supply it to the hospital. And also they weren't allowed to put up the prices. And the hospital has a person who you apply to and you get your PPE from them if you need it. But yeah,
Did you see a lot of mask wearing in people?
Initially, yes. Just the last week, though, everybody's been very slack, I've got to say. With Kiwis, honestly, give them an inch. Because we know that, like I said, it's been 36 days since there's been a case in my whole area where I live. I mean, no, pretty much you can say it's not here.
See, I have to admit and put my hand up and say that I haven't worn a mask. I think that I will, and so I've got one ordered. But for confined areas of supermarkets and things like that. But the reason that I didn't do that is because it took me a while to realize what the value was. And what I mean by that is I wasn't getting a clear message through the media in the UK in regards to how I could help. And I sort of thought to myself, well, am I at risk? Not particularly. I'm not old enough. I'm pretty healthy. I don't have any underlying health conditions. Do I have any children or any elderly people that I'm in contact with daily? No, I don't. Okay, so really, I'm just going to the shops once a day or walking down the street once a day to get some exercise. I don't need to wear a mask. And I think that's the way a lot of people saw it. And mask wearing was probably 5, 10%, I reckon, which is quite a low number, right? And then I realized over the course of a few weeks that if I get sick, it puts pressure on the health system, and someone who's really sick might die. And suddenly it made sense. But I had to come to grips with that through Hannah, my girlfriend, explaining it to me several times until it got through. That shouldn't be the case. I should have got that clearly at 1 o'clock every day, right?
Absolutely, and I think that's what these we have Jacinta and Ashley Bloomfield, who's the Health Director General, giving us absolute facts every day. And the interesting thing about that is the opposite political opposition, which is the National Party, really haven't got a lot to say because it's very hard to you end up nitpicking at things. Of course, nothing's 100%. But if your goal at the end of the day is to try and eliminate it, then it's been pretty successful. And like I say, though, we're pretty unique in that we were very lucky. We could see Italy going like man, and at one point we had the same number of people infected. So it wasn't, people were already very uneasy. Tourism is our second biggest industry here. We get a lot of visitors, and a lot of them are Chinese. But like I say, they stopped that fairly early on. It was actually the Kiwis coming home that did a lot.
So that must have been the plane that was commissioned that actually landed the day that I left.
God.
Funnily enough, and obviously came through a different part of the airport and were sent into isolation.
Yeah. Well,
But
if you come here now, you have to go and isolate in a hotel, and you have to be tested to be let out, and that's
really,
fair enough. Oh yeah,
it
why
is fair
wouldn't you?
enough.
Why wouldn't you? I mean, if you've got the numbers down, what they are, where they are in the country, then really the only way you can get it is bringing it in. So that's why we're allowed to be at, we're on from Thursday onwards, we're going to be allowed to travel domestically as well.
I think Canada's doing the same thing, and it sounds like the UK might do the same thing because traveling internationally has complexities, doesn't it, and
Oh,
risk.
yeah, huge risk for us because, there is a point where you let it go and you really have to go with it and try and deal with the outcome. I'm thinking about the US here. Whereas here we're not in that same space, we might be able to ride it out for a couple of years until we come up with a something, vaccine. But in the meantime, we're quite happy to be by ourselves. We can get on with stuff. It's no big deal.
I think our Australian cousins say the same thing.
Yeah,
Quite quite happy, thanks. We're all right.
we make more food than we can eat.
I wish I could say the same thing about the UK.
I know.
I once saw a chart that showed, oh, sorry, a diagram that showed the resource use of London, and I'm just outside London really, but travel in for work and work with a lot of people in London. And effectively, the map was this red blob that spread out across the nor across Europe, across the north of Africa, and it was subdivided into different areas: water, food, electricity, and other things. And it's really clear how much the UK as an island relies on the surrounding areas for resources. Which makes it really difficult during a time like COVID, right? Because what do you do as a nation? Do you allow toilet paper in, but not other things? Do you allow tinned fish in, but not other things? How do you feed the people, but keep the place safe? And, England, particularly more so than Northern Ireland or Ireland or Scotland or Wales, has just really suffered. And I think that a big part of that is that there are a lot of elderly here, but another big part of that is that we've seen throughout most of our lifetimes really quite right-wing governments that have just cut the health budget until there was very little health service. And I think that's what we're really seeing, as evidenced by people in the healthcare industry not being able to protect themselves because they couldn't get access to the equipment.
Yeah, it's quite sad because the NHS, well, our hospital system was modelled on the NHS, it's been quite good. But even our system had been wound down quite a bit versus private funding, with insurance, health insurance, and stuff like that, over the last really 15 years, but in particular the last 9 years. Today, They have the government has announced a $4 billion over 4 years for the health sector, and
Wow.
280 million immediately for all of the operations and backlogged stuff that didn't happen because of COVID, because there are a lot of people who need, all sorts of specialists and tests and stuff, and they've sort of acknowledged that has been put on hold. So they've announced 280 million for that just to kick it off, and a further 4 billion over the next 4 years. Because again, as you say, what's really kicked you up the bum is how much your NHS and our public health system has actually been wound down very slowly over time, but it's not good, and you can
No,
see.
I feel like it's really brought people back to what matters and what we really need to function as a society in terms of health and housing and food and jobs, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, even for us, there's a lot of Māori up north that are in extremely poor housing. They were in living in tents and old caravans and stuff. And when the government brought in the level four, they sent 60 motor homes up there for people to live in because it was substandard accommodation. So they haven't just done, they've had to sort out, and they've had to sort out the homelessness and the people who are marginalised and who don't have that kind of housing in the first place, because you can't be in a bubble. If your bubble is really bad, you're going to end up with even worse health outcomes. So you've got to reduce that. So it's actually brought forward a whole lot of social stuff that probably wouldn't have gotten done without them it forcing it to happen, and it happened very quickly.
And I'm really looking forward to seeing that happen in across a number of nations at the same time, including the UK, because I really hope that this has made it very clear how important the health service is. And not in terms of let's clap for the heroes once a week. And by that, as you know, my mum's been in the health service my entire life, and I have deep respect for anybody that cares for other people. But I really didn't like the way they became a PR token in the game to pretend that everything was fine, and also to basically to make heroes and martyrs out of people who are not being adequately provisioned with what they need to get the job done, and who know that they need more people in their team to be able to get the job done. You know, that really cut me in terms of being too close to the bone.
Platitudes are not good. When it, yeah, you're right. When it's covering over at such a huge need and such a huge shortage, you have the states where you don't have a public health system to have a look at, of a way not to do it.
Also happens to be the worst death toll in the world.
Well, that's why, and they're competing for all sorts of resources between states. They haven't got no real. The thing about having a national health system, whether it's in UK or here, is that at least you have one body that is supposed to be in charge, a coordinating. In the states, they don't have that, and it's they like to think they're so democratic, but the way that they work is not democratic. They just rip one another off. And fancy having to compete from state to state for who's going to pay the most money for this PPE. It's shocking, when they need it. Oh, just so many things wrong with that health system. And they have been, from looking from the outside, meaning New Zealand, looking at the state system, I just feel so sorry for the public in the states because they really are stuck. What about all the people who've lost their jobs? They haven't got their private health insurance. Where do they go? Nowhere,
Health poverty, yeah.
Oh, it's just shocking. Absolutely shocking.
And it doesn't need to be like that, right? I hope that they learn from it, and I hope that they see some change in that area, because if Scandinavia has taught us anything, it is that provide the basic things that a society needs to function in terms of education and health and housing and so forth, and the place will thrive. It's really simple, isn't it?
Well, except that, you know, you're talking about money. And if I can make a whole lot of money off a health system and lobby to get my pharmaceutical company as much money as they can, you know, that's the American way. It's the way they do business. And fundamentally, that is the wrong thing to do when it comes to caring for people. It's the right thing to do when it comes to big business. It's a great model for big business, but for your care of your people, no, it's not so great.
Definitely. Let's contrast that with what China did, because I find it quite interesting that it started in China, that China is one of New Zealand's major trading partners, and as you say, one of the major sources of travel and tourism, and yet it still didn't really make it to New Zealand in such a big way as a virus. So how did China and New Zealand prevent that spread? That's what's interesting to me.
I think it was just we had a reasonable amount of time to stop it. I think it was that simple. You know,
and I guess China went into proper, I don't know what you'd call it, state level 6 or level 7 lockdown, didn't they, where they locked down cities and built hospitals?
They did. I mean, they knew they had a massive problem. I mean, they knew it for a while before the rest of the world knew it. But the thing is that because we're so far over here, I mean, it takes a while to even just fly here, you know. We were just very lucky, and we were lucky that that we stopped people coming in from China, and then we were lucky that we didn't get more outbreaks from the people who did return. We had a father and son, and this is on the news, everybody knows about it, come in from the States back to New Zealand, and they both actually had COVID, but one of them had COVID that originated in Europe and the other one had the COVID that originated in China because, of course, now you have the mutations.
Wow.
And they came back together on the same plane, you know, great. Ended up in Wellington Hospital and, you know, but it's fascinating that, you know, that can happen because, of course, now you get slight mutations, you know, where the A changes for a G or the U. And I'm talking about RNA, and now they can actually trace back whereabouts in the world you got your COVID from. So that's quite interesting, you know. So we were I honestly think we were lucky. We were lucky to have the number we had, and we were lucky to have such a decisive and communicative government that everyone bought into bubble and level concept. And just we're the kind of people like we've got a short attention span, mate. Get it over and done with, and that's it. And pretty much this is what's happened.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the small business perspective, because that's unfortunately in the UK, and I'm not just trying to beat up on the UK, but it's the nation that I know the best at the moment. We had a situation where people from Uber drivers to Deliveroo to small businesses that might have been tradespeople, etc., all found themselves out of work. And although the salaried employees could get 80% of their salary claimed from the company, from the government, small business people at the time initially had nothing.
Yeah.
What happened in New Zealand?
We had different stages of subsidies. The big businesses or companies had wage subsidy, and then you had like the small business owner or the self-employed person, and all of which can apply for the same subsidy per person, and you got $7,200 or something like that. Per person for wages.
Simple as that.
2 days it took to get paid. 2 days. I applied on Monday, got it in my bank account on Thursday. Yeah. And
it's just a great example of how a small democracy is working well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and it is numbers too. So that's the wage subsidy. They came out today with a further thing to say that for small businesses, they can get a loan up to $100,000 interest-free if they pay it back within a year. You know, there's a whole lot of – because what they're doing now, really level two is about trying to restart everything – trying to get people to spend money too, because we need people to go around and spend money at all of these businesses, particularly the businesses, their restaurants, you know, all the businesses that need high volumes of people through them, whether they're tourists or cafes or restaurants or whatever. But those businesses need people to go, and it's actually been quite a big push for Kiwis to go locally, to go and support your local businesses. You just said something about Uber Eats. Jacinta on TV the other day said, you know, go to your local place, don't use Uber Eats. They take 35% of the income. 35%. What is that going to do?
That's a lot, isn't it?
What's that going to do for the cafe owner? I mean, but she said it, you know, to the nation. So, you know, Uber Eats drivers can get a subsidy if they're out of work. But the point is that you need to support the businesses so that all the money's going to them. So what a lot of them did was just, you'd ring up, you order something, you go down there, tell them, ring them and tell them you're there. They put it out on a table and done, you're done. You know, and it's click and collect type thing. But now we will be able to go into the premises from Thursday. And so the government is...
And please give us our flat whites back, right? Do you want to just describe to the world what a flat white is?
A flat white. flat white is a coffee that has, I guess it's similar to what you would call a cappuccino, except that it hasn't got a lot of fluff on top, bubbles on top of milk. And it's usually got minimum of 2 shots of coffee, but most have 4 if you get a big one. But Kiwis love their coffee, and everybody drinks flat white. So, yes, we've been hanging out for that, and I'm pretty sure a few coffee places have done quite well over the last week.
But I bet they have.
We're on a sort of like a 14-day turnaround. So going from level 3 to level 2, which is what we're doing right now, we've had 14 days, and they've been on TV every day saying this is how many no people died today, one person the other day, 2 people have been affected over here. You know, so everybody knows. And if the numbers were going up, we wouldn't have gone to level 2, we'd have stayed at 3. So there's no guessing. There's, you know, and I think that in itself, you get people who get anxious if they don't know what's going on.
Well, I feel that way right now. I don't know what's going on. I don't, and you know, I'm sure you've heard about the Boris Johnson announcement a couple of days ago that people should stay home unless they have to go out, and then if they have to go out, they shouldn't go to work unless they have to go to work. Yeah. It's just like, you know, even the Scottish Prime Minister was like, "This doesn't make any sense. This is not going to apply in Scotland. Please don't say that it will." Right?
I know, we saw that. One of the things we do in New Zealand is watch world news quite a lot. I think it's because, you know, we're sort of at the end of the other side of the world and we need to know what's going on. But
Dad would say it's because we've got less going on at home.
Yeah, we've got not much going on, and it's really good to watch other people. But pretty much the whole thing about buy-in with bubbles and levels is informing everyone all the time, and actually also having things, systems in place so that you know that people are going to get to the end of a certain period of time and they are really going to want to go out. So what do? You say, well, if we meet this, this and this, then we can do that. And that is exactly what's happened here. And that's why people are pretty much stuck to their bubbles, like seriously stuck.
Which is pretty amazing considering this is a culture not too far from Australia, and both cultures drive four-wheel drives on the beach when they feel like it and do whatever the heck they want, right?
Oh, yeah.
At times.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like I said at the beginning, you know, Kiwis aren't exactly – yes, they will do what they want to do.
Unless it makes sense and it's made very clear.
Very clear, and a Boris Johnson type information given the other day would just do people's head in over here. They wouldn't get it. They wouldn't get it at all.
And you get chaos. And that's, you know, we had a street party just down the street the other day, and Hannah was walking home and she had to walk around that street, around that block, because there were, you know, 60, 70 people just sitting out having a yarn, having a party.
Well, you know, the other thing about COVID is there's a couple of things about it, is that You can be asymptomatic, you can be a carrier. How do you know how long your immunity, if you do get it, how long the immunity is going to last? Is it going to last 2 years like SARS or so, or is it going to actually, you're not immune, or are you actually immune to the Asian COVID or the European COVID, because they're actually slightly mutated. So who knows? Just stay clear. And some people have very little symptoms and other people get a real good kick up the ass. I mean, Boris should know. Look at him. He still looks crook. I see him on TV and I think, geez, go and have a rest.
Indeed. Speaking of going and having a rest, what do you think, what are you seeing people have learned from this process?
I think we've learned that we are more, we can be more cohesive as a nation and be more, we're not very patriotic out on the outside. I mean, you know what Kiwis are like they like things that are in New Zealand to be up there and promoted and all that kind of thing, but at the same time, they don't want to talk about it. They won't sort of, like I said with Jacinta, yes, we know that she is out there on the world stage, but are we that in awe about it? Hell no. It's like she's doing a job,
So what would you say to the rest of the world? What would you say to your average person who wants a Jacinta to run their country?
Yeah, you've all got them. Go and find your Jacinta. They will be there. She is, and I've got to say, it's not just her. She has a wicked team behind her. It is not just her. She has gone through a couple of, well, we had the earthquakes, we had the shootings, and then we had White Island disaster, all of which are crises. So you're looking at a team of people behind Jacinta who were used to doing crisis management. And that's important because they could boom up and running and they were not unused to that. You know what I mean? So they had a bit of training really before that. She already would have had a team there that was pretty focused that she could rely on. And you've got to give props to those people because it's
Absolutely.
not one person. She is a great leader and very decisive. And yes, you need that. She's a politician who's worked at it too. She hasn't just sprung up out of nowhere. She's been in the background in the Labour Party for a long time. I think she worked for the Auckland Council before that. I'm not sure, but this is what she's been wanting to do. That's who you've got to look out for, really. But, what can I say? She's been very good.
She's inspiring so many, her and her team, you know. I think.
And it is her and her team. I mean, it is. And needless to say, we are proud of her. There's no doubt about that. And you'll be hard pressed to find anyone really who seriously is upset about the way that it's been managed here. I think there's a lot of people who've lost their jobs and their incomes and their businesses here.
And the New Zealand economy is very fragile because it's relatively small and relatively isolated, right?
Yeah, but the thing is that what people have to recognize and get over is that the world before COVID is not the world after COVID. And if you recognize that, then you can reevaluate, redo your stuff, redo your business to the new norm because it's not the old norm. And anyone who's going, well, oh yeah, and then we can get back to normal. Well, you can't get back to normal. You can't. You can't get back to normal until the world is vaccinated. That's it, and so that the businesses that will survive will be the businesses who can adapt quickly, and even find different niches. They will be the ones that survive. If you're a business who's trying to survive like we did last time before, no, won't work.
And that is a quite a shift for people, isn't it? You know, I've had guests on who've said, you know, they just think there's going to be a flurry of doing that happens because people have sat at home for 6 weeks, contemplating that thing that they thought they would always do, and perhaps fearing for their lives and thinking that they might have missed their chance. And so there could be this real feeling of renaissance, you know?
Possibly. I think also there's also a feeling, and I get this from other countries too, that what it's brought up is that how vulnerable people are, that they're not self-sufficient because of globalization. They are not self-sufficient. Do we really want to go back down that road and be so globalized that, okay, well, everything is manufactured in that part of the world. We get all the raw product from this part of the world and we're going to chuck it over that part of the world. You know, make local, be local, buy local, you know, and this is...
And be safe, right?
And that's going to be more of a norm. It is going to be more, for us, it's going to be more of a norm.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Buy New Zealand Made is a campaign that's been run most of our lives, right?
Yeah, it has.
It's not really something that you see here very often. You do see quite a lot of made by US made in the States, as you know, but it's I didn't really see much of it in Spain or in Italy or in Greece, all places that really need to buy local. So yeah, you're right. I hope that there is a trend towards localization. What else do you think that people have learned from this process?
I think like your everyday little ant that trots off to work, goes to his desk or her desk, and trots back home, buzzes around, goes to the gym, you know, your 20s, 30s something that has a bit of money, has a job, has no kids, has no direction in a lot of ways. I think they're having a good look at themselves because they have to work differently. They're not going to work like their parents worked, because the world that their parents worked in isn't the same world, you know. There's a lot of pressure to be this person because of social media, let's say your 20-year-olds. And they've had to stay home and they can't go out and take the Insta picture and they can't go, oh, look at me, I'm over here and this is, I'm living my best life. Because you know what? That's not real. That's not real life. Not everybody lives their best life every single time of the day. And a lot of people think that they do because all they do is look at stuff online. And because you're at home for this amount of time with your family, that's what's real, you know. So the way that your ordinary office worker is going to work in New Zealand is going to be different. That has definitely changed because what they've found is that actually a lot of people can work from home and don't need to actually go in.
And although people probably don't realise it, New Zealand and Australia have a high percentage of people living in major cities and therefore quite bad traffic, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, do we really all need to flock in at the same time? No, we don't. And so that's a little lesson. Save on all sorts of stuff by not doing it. But also, you know, if you're forced to stay at home with your family or in your bubble might not be your family, it might be your flatmates. You know, which one of my daughters in with four different flatmates. And that's really cool. They've... you know, although obviously they live together, they know one another, but there's nothing like spending 6 weeks together, you know, to really get to know people. And that's been actually quite good. I mean, they've done all sorts of things. They have quiz nights and, you know, stuff that you actually would not do normally. You just wouldn't, you know.
Because you'd be too busy buzzing around and
you're
rushing.
Too busy being, you know, this little working bee. And and thinking you're going to miss out on this if you don't do that, and I've got to go and do this, and I've got to do that. So it slowed down a lot of people's lives, just completely slowed it down, quite abruptly in some people's cases, but slowed it completely down. And I think that is something that's come out of it, is that it's forced a lot of people to actually really just evaluate, where am I? What am I doing? You know, do I need to do that? Do I want to do that? And I think that's been quite good.
Yeah, absolutely. What things are you going to change about your life?
I think probably I actually travel around the world a lot, I've got to say.
A lot.
Yeah.
Maybe the most well-traveled part of the family.
Not from, yeah. I mean, no, actually, my sister Monic travels more than me.
That's true.
But
almost the most traveled.
You're almost. I will stay more local and enjoy that because I really don't need to go overseas to have a holiday. I don't. I can have one right here in Wellington like I have over the last 6 weeks, to be honest. I mean, I have enjoyed it. And it's one of these things because I haven't been paid. I'm self-employed. I don't get paid when I work. I don't work. But, it forces you to realise that actually work isn't everything. I have enough to eat. I have a house over my head. I have healthy family. I have two wonderful grandsons I see regularly. Do I need much more than that? Probably not, actually, because that's what's important. All this other stuff that I do because I can, really, not because I need to. I don't need to, what do you really need to do in life, I guess, is what I'm looking at.
I think a lot of people are having that moment, and I find that myself, that I'm just buying less stuff and feeling the need of less.
Yeah.
And what did grandma used to say? On one side, waste not, want not. And then on the other side, want for nothing, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Really is right. Yes, summer's here, actually.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. And I feel for all the people globally who are now missing grandparents.
Yeah. And, there's a lot of pain out there. And that's sort of why I sort of feel, not guilty, but I know there are a lot of people out there hurting who have actually lost people because of COVID. And in New Zealand, we're quite sheltered from that. And we're very lucky, very, very lucky. And, and we know it. We really do know it. My heart goes out to all those people who have lost someone. And, what can you say?
Yeah. What about if you were to recommend a book, a movie, or an audio book, or two, that have sort of hit the spot for you in the last 6 weeks, what would they be?
I haven't actually read anything because I've been so busy. Sounds ridiculous.
Isn't that amazing?
I haven't, and I normally do read. I actually read quite often because I usually, that is my downtime from when I'm working, and I, read a book or go see a movie or whatever. But I have been, my daughter and my brother, my son-in-law are actually essential workers, and I have been looking after their two children, and one's a 10-month-old. And I can tell you now, Ollie, a 10-month-old, do not turn your back on that child because he will climb up on top of the couch and jump off it when you're not looking. Very
so
busy
you've been
with
a
them.
Full-time grandma. Fair enough.
I have. Fair and enough. So I actually haven't done anything like, and that's another thing. I haven't had the time to do that kind of thing. And to be honest, TV bores me at the moment because it seems so superficial to what's happening around the world, I've even gotten sick of watching CNN and BBC and Sky TV and all the news programs, which I do watch every now and again, just so that I know what's sort of going on. But the reason why I've gotten sick of them is because they are quite biased, and particularly the American ones. and it's hard to decipher. I mean, I hate the word fake news, but there is a lot of fake news out there, and that's because Donald Trump has given it a bad name, calling all the stuff that he thinks is wrong fake news. But actually, there is a lot of stuff out there that's fake, and that's why I like listening to podcasts and stuff, because at least you hear it from real people rather than some product or some produced item, you know, because they have to produce something by the end of this 24-hour period, you know. It certainly feels like that. So no, I can't recommend anything. Over the last 6 weeks, I've done none of that. Not, I haven't even really watched anything. Yeah, just haven't had the time.
But I'm sure those grandkids are well fed and well looked after.
Oh, look, I've been too busy being a person rather than just sitting there and doing, sitting there and something else entertains me, you know. We're allowed to go out and on walks and any time of the day and for as long as you like, unlike some other cities in the world. And so we've got a regional park right next to us, which when I say regional park, it's got a lot of wildlife, birds, and it's just literally hundreds of acres worth of farmland and forest and stuff. So
The
it's,
top of a hill.
yeah. And then at the bottom of the hill, we've got a great big river, which has a river walk, and you know, so there's lots to do. Yeah. Get back to nature.
Yes. It's such an interesting time because we've all gone through this shared experience in our different parts of the world, and I think therefore we can all learn from how each group has responded to it. And I think that disaster response that you talked about, that Jacinta's team is quite well practiced in, unfortunately, but also fortunately, that can be applied to a lot of crises in the world, can't it?
Oh, absolutely. They have done it well, even down to, you know, one of the things that I was impressed with, even though it sounds stupid, about, so we went to level three. We had 48 hours to get all our stuff together and go into level four, which chief was even more restrictive. And by the weekend, so that on the Tuesday, by the weekend, I had received in the mail a great big pamphlet that set out levels 1 to 4, everything I needed to know. You know, I mean, that's how good they are, that they had even had that in place. They even had stuff printed up so that everyone could learn, stick it on your fridge or wherever. And that's how organized they were. And I thought, wow, that's amazing.
Yep, and that's what we should all be demanding in our constituency.
Yeah. We're very lucky.
And on that note, thank you so much for sharing the New Zealand story of what it's been like during lockdown, and lots of love to you and the family.
You too. Big, big love, Arohanui. And yeah, I'll talk to you another time, Ollie.
Sounds good. Thank you for tuning in, folks. I think that this is almost the end of the lockdown series, unless another one pops up. I hope that you and your families are safe, and please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes.